Suns Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. As you may know, there's this little thing called the NBA Finals going on here in the United States. Game one was Thursday night in Oakland, California. The defending champs, the Golden State Warriors, pulled out a closer-than-it-sounds victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Warriors needed overtime for a 124-114 win over the Cavs. With just seconds left in regulation, it looked as if Cleveland was going to take the lead for good, as George Hill, an 80% free throw shooter, went to the foul line with the Cavs trailing 107-106. Hill made the first shot and then missed the second. With the game tied at 107, Cleveland's J.R. Smith grabbed the rebound, and instead of going up for a shot, he ran the ball out toward the three-point line. The Cavs did not get off a shot in time, and in overtime, the Warriors jumped out to a 116-107 lead and didn't look back. After the game, all anyone wanted to talk about was what happened on the last play of regulation. Many people thought Smith did not know the game was tied when he grabbed the rebound and dribbled away from the basket. Smith, however, said he knew the score.
No, I seen it. I knew it was tied. It's just, I thought I was going to call timeout because I got the rebound. I'm pretty sure everybody didn't think I was going to shoot over KD right there. So,
LeBron James had 51 points for the Cavs, his best postseason game ever, and one of the best ever for an NBA Finals. He was clearly disappointed to see the Cavs miss a chance to take a 1-0 series lead.
I think we played as well as, tonight we played as well as we've played all postseason. And we gave ourselves a chance, possession after possession after possession, and there was just some plays that was kind of taken away from us. Simple as that.
James was specifically talking about a play late in the fourth quarter, where it looked as if he had drawn a charge on a driving Kevin Durant. The play was reviewed and reversed by the referees. So instead of Cleveland getting the ball with 36 seconds to play and a 104-102 lead, Durant made two free throws to tie the game. James had 8 rebounds and 8 assists to go along with his 51 points. He was obviously upset about the missed opportunity, and he left his post-game press conference without fully answering the last question about what happened on the final play of regulation.
I knew it was a tie game. We was down one. George Hill went up. He made the first one. We got the offensive rebound. You know, I thought we were all aware of what was going on. That's my view. So I don't know what JR was thinking. I don't know the question you're trying to ask.
The Warriors, however, were in a great mood after the game. Draymond Green, who finished with 13 points and 11 rebounds, was all smiles when asked if the Warriors were lucky to win.
Sometimes you need a little luck. It's, you know, it's good to be lucky sometimes. So I'll take it. You know, I think, you know, when he got the rebound, he probably could have laid it up. But nonetheless, you know, that's a part of the game, you know, being locked in. And I mean, you got to know the score. That's just kind of basketball. Like, you got to know if you're winning or losing or tie. So, you know, we'll take it. And you know, sometimes it's good to be a little lucky. So.
Steph Curry had 29 points and 9 assists as he tries to win his third title in 4 tries. He's also looking to be named the Finals MVP for the first time. Looks like he's off to a good start. Curry said, "It doesn't matter how the game finished. All that mattered was Golden State is now 1-0 in the best of 7 series."
I think all game ones are just different in their own right, because
having to adjust to a certain style of play with a, you know, a different team. But the way that went down the wire, we were scrambling on that last missed free throw, trying to get the rebound. Saw JR running back towards half court. Kind of didn't know what was going on at the time because we were all trying to find a man in case they tried to get a shot up. But thankfully, time ran out so we could have new life in overtime. But the finals, man, anything's liable to happen. And all that matters is you get a win and turn the page to game two and just enjoy the moment.
That's Golden State's spark plug and leader, Steph Curry, talking about the first game of the NBA Finals on Thursday night. Game two is on Sunday night in Oakland before the series moves to Cleveland for game three on June 6th. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. While you're certainly aware of the NBA Finals, there's also a championship series going on in a sport that many of our African listeners may be less familiar with, and that's ice hockey. Here in Washington, D.C., many people are excitedly following the local NHL team, the Washington Capitals, who are playing the Las Vegas Golden Knights in the championship series. Game three comes to Capital One Arena, a mere 10-minute walk from the VOA studios, with the series tied at one game apiece. The matchup between Washington and Las Vegas is a unique one. Las Vegas is a brand new team in the league, playing its first game last fall, as an expansion team making the playoffs, let alone the finals in your first season, is a remarkable accomplishment. Washington, on the other hand, had not won a game in the league's championship series before defeating Las Vegas in Game 2 earlier this week. When Washington was an expansion team in 1975, the Capitals only won 8 of 80 games. Our VOA colleague Jim Stevenson has more on what the success of the Golden Knights meant to Las Vegas this season, as well as a golf roundup in his The Game Room podcast. Take it away, Jim.
The Vegas Golden Knights skated to a 6-4 victory over the Washington Capitals in Game 1 of the National Ice Hockey League's Stanley Cup Finals. Bill Bradley, assistant managing editor for sports for the Las Vegas Review-Journal, says the team's inaugural season has pulled the city's sports fans together.
Suddenly you get things like 600, 700, 800 people showing up to practices every day. You get people jockeying for tables at sports bars so they can watch the team.
On October 1st, a gunman perched in a high-rise hotel room shot and killed 58 concertgoers and wounded hundreds of others in Las Vegas. Following the tragedy, Golden Knights fan Brandon Lauben says the team helped the city to recover.
Everybody was mourning in the city. And just to see them break out of it and just to have the team come at that time to lift the spirits of everybody, it was truly indescribable.
The Golden Knights started the season by winning 8 of their first 9 games.
And I think everybody started to believe that this could happen. But as the season went on, they proved it could happen. And look where we are. Stanley Cup Finals.
Now after 3 playoff series wins and in the Stanley Cup Finals, thousands of fans like Kevin and Ashley Lewis think the Vegas Golden Knights can win the championship.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. We got the momentum, baby. We're going to win it. Yeah.
If there was one tournament I really wanted to win, it was this one.
After placing 2nd last year, Italian golfer Francesco Molinari claimed the BMW PGA Championship by 2 shots over Northern Ireland's Rory McIlroy.
I've been close many times, and yeah, I just think the difference was today. I had a little bit of luck at the right time, and sometimes it's your week and sometimes it isn't, so it's great to come out on top.
McIlroy held the lead after both the first and second rounds and was the co-leader after 3.
You know, I let Francesco get a few shots
ahead on me, and you know, I couldn't claw that back. So played some good golf coming down the back nine, hit some better shots, but you know, need to work on a few things going forward.
And he hopes to quickly solve some of his erratic shots.
You know, when you're missing shots left and right, it becomes a little more difficult. So just a few more hours on the range and try to get ready for next week.
Kiradek Afabanrat of Thailand dealt with windy conditions as he finished 4 shots off the pace.
You know, this golf course is really difficult. I try to stay calm and playing shot by shot. Keep the ball in play. It's the most important. The thing that's really difficult is the wind. You know, it's coming from everywhere. I just want to keep the ball in play, keep it low under the winds, but it sought out really well.
There may be political uncertainty in Italy right now, but English golfer Tyrrell Hatton is the definite defending champion at the Italian Open this week.
Obviously, good memories being back here. Obviously, a new venue. Looking forward to it. Hopefully I can put up a good defense.
He chases a second consecutive win at a different venue and had not seen the course at Gardagolf Country Club in Soiano del Lago before his arrival.
So yeah, it's my first time seeing it right now. I've heard it's a beautiful place, but obviously I haven't heard anything from about the golf course. So I look forward to playing 9 holes a bit later today and seeing it.
That's an excerpt from the Game Room podcast produced by our VOA colleague Jim Stevenson each week. You can find the full program by searching for The Game Room at voanews.com. I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In a busy weekend here in Washington, D.C., there's one other event that's worth mentioning. In the former stadium used by D.C.'s MLS team, D.C. United, the Springboks of South Africa are taking on Wales in an exhibition rugby match on Saturday night. The Springboks have 28 wins out of 33 matches with Wales. However, the Welsh team won the last meeting between the squads in December of last year. We'll have more on the results of the match on Monday's show. Joining us now with an update on the French Open tennis tournament and a look ahead to the weekend's round of 32 action is my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. On Thursday, Rafael Nadal of Spain advanced to the third round in his quest to seal an 11th French Open title. He defeated Argentinian Guido Pella in straight sets, 6-2, 6-1, 6-1. The world number one jumped out to a 5-0 lead in the second set and claimed the final 6 games in the third. After his win, Rafa said despite playing a solid match, he's taking it one game at a time.
I'm just going day by day, and I'm happy about the things that happened this afternoon, of course. I played a solid match, and it's true that during the match, I improved the level. The forehand, especially after the first set, I think it starts to go quicker and finding more the right spots, playing more inside the court and hitting much more winners. No? So in general terms, I have to be happy. No? It's of course, a great result. 6-2, 6-1, 6-1. It's not possible without playing well. So just happy for that and happy about the concentration that I was able to hold all the time, the right focus on the match to keep doing the things better and better.
And Rafa said he's looking forward to his next matchup against Frenchman Richard Gasquet.
I have a great relationship with him, always, since we were kids. We met each other the first time when I had 12. And first thing is a very good person. No? He's a very normal guy. We practiced hundreds of times together. He came to Mallorca. He's one of the guys on the tour that creates good atmosphere. He always has a positive attitude, not creating no one problem and being a normal person. No, I like him a lot, and yes, will be a good match against a good friend in the most important place in my career, and for him a very special place too.
That match will be played on Saturday. On the women's side, American Serena Williams has advanced to the third round after Thursday's victory over Australian Ashley Barty, 3-6, 6-3, 6-4. This year's French Open marks Serena's first major tournament appearance after giving birth to her daughter last September. And Serena says she's in it to win it.
I've definitely always had that will to win. It was something I was born with, thank goodness. But, you know, this is a Grand Slam. You know, it's my first one back. And, you know, I want to do the best that I can. And I want to be able to do my best and, you know, one day tell my daughter that I tried my best.
Serena will face off against Julia Gerges of Germany in women's singles competition on Saturday. But first, she will join sister Venus in doubles tennis action. They team up against Belgium's Kirsten Flipkens and Italy's Sara Errani on Friday. Moving on to the World Cup, we are less than 2 weeks away from the 2018 kickoff in Russia. And with only 13 days to go, here is a fun fact. 13 is the number of goals made by Juste Fontaine of France at the 1958 Sweden World Cup. 60 years later, that number still stands as the most goals anyone has scored at a single World Finals. Remarkably, Fontaine scored those record-setting goals wearing a borrowed pair of boots. His teammate with the same shoe size came to the rescue after Fontaine's own shoes fell apart. In a 2014 interview, Fontaine jokingly said some of the goals were inspired by two spirits coming together inside the same shoe. France ended the tournament that year in third place, but many in the football world still remember Fontaine's amazing achievement, a first in football history that will unlikely be beaten anytime soon. And that does it for me. Dan, I'll hand it back over to you. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Gwen. Hope you have a great weekend, too. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Dan Friedel, in for Sonny Young in Washington. And you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
One life, live it up, cause we got one life. One life, live it up, cause we got one life. One life, live it up, cause you don't get it twice.
Speaking of World Cup soccer, we're joined now by Steve Goff of the Washington Post. Steve is the newspaper's soccer writer. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Thanks, Dan. Glad to join you.
So one of the big stories from this week is the news coming out of Madrid yesterday. Zinedine Zidane, the French star who made his name in the World Cup 20 years ago and helped lead Real Madrid to the Champions League title 3 seasons in a row, is stepping down. What does that mean to Real Madrid, and is there any news of who might replace him?
Well, it's certainly a shocker. I mean, he you know, just days after winning the ultimate prize in international club football, the Champions League, he walks out on his own terms. I mean, it took a lot of courage to do it, I think, but away he goes. There were some hints over the course of the season that this might be the end, given the amount of success he's already achieved. But for it to happen the way it did the past few days was certainly a shock. Long term, I think he will become the manager of the French national team, either after this World Cup or in future years. That does seem destined. But for now, he's going to step away and spend some time with the family, appreciate, enjoy what he's accomplished at Real, and take the next step. As for Real, hard to say. I mean, I certainly don't have any insight into their thinking, but there'll be a number of high-level candidates from which to choose.
Yeah, it could do worse in your career than stepping into a team that's one of the biggest in the world and already won 3 Champions League finals in a row.
Sure, yeah.
In more local news here, but still related to international soccer, there's been a lot of talk about DC United, which is moving into a brand new stadium in a matter of weeks, perhaps unveiling an internationally known star player. What can you tell us about Wayne Rooney coming to DC?
Talks continue. you know, this saga has dragged on for about a month now. DC United wants Wayne Rooney. Wayne Rooney seems very interested in coming to Major League Soccer and playing for DC United. He visited the city and met with team officials last week. They appear to have finalized a contract deal or a general contract deal. But it's more complicated than that. You know, with an international transfer involving a player who remains under contract with another team, you have to go negotiate with that club. And so DC United is also in talks with Everton, Rooney's employer this past season. And that continues. The chances of a deal are very good, but it's certainly not done. And the sides continue to talk. If they do reach a deal, Rooney would not be eligible to play, to begin playing, until mid-July. That's when the MLS transfer window, international transfer window, opens. So there is some urgency to get this done because you want pieces in place. But at the same time, it's not as if he could step field right away anyway.
So moving back to the World Cup coming up in less than 2 weeks now, any key developments with any of the notable players or teams leading into the opening weekend of play?
For World Cup?
Yeah, for the World Cup teams. I mean, I know, for example, some of our African listeners might be interested in hearing about whether Mohamed Salah is going to be fit to play in any of the group games for Egypt.
That's the big question. I mean, Salah had one of the great seasons of all time in England with Liverpool. He was injured in the Champions League final, unfortunately. And now we wait and see if his shoulder recovers in time for World Cup.
Do you feel like it's just going to be kind of same old as far as the World Cup goes with the top five or six teams that we've seen in the last couple of decades competing? Or is there a chance that we might see a little shakeup?
That's a good question. Yes and no. I think you're going to see the usuals. I mean, I think Germany enters as the favorite. Brazil is a serious contender. France, Spain, perhaps Argentina, if Messi is in top form. You know, I think there's a bit of an outside element with Portugal, which is the defending European champion, and Belgium, which is loaded with talent and seems poised for a long run in a major tournament. Beyond that, you know, did I mention France? You know, France is in there. Beyond that, I don't think you could see a team get to the pull an upset or two, get to the semifinals. But I think at the end of the day, it'll be one of those usual big teams. Potential surprises out there. I think Senegal has the possibility to go a long way, perhaps, maybe the quarterfinals, depending on their form. Peru is making its first appearance in World Cup since 1982. So a strong team from South America there as well. Colombia, which fared well at the last World Cup and has top talent in European leagues. So, I think we'll have some good matches, some surprises, but typically with the World Cup, the traditional teams end up in the last few games.
So, unfortunately, we won't be able to watch the USA team in this year's World Cup, but I think that fans of the United States and soccer still will have plenty to watch and capture their attention this month. Steve, we're out of time for today, but I really appreciate you spending some time with us, and enjoy the next month and a half of soccer.
It's going to be an adventure. Thanks a lot, Dan.
And that wraps up the June 1st edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Workinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Thomas Blondet. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington. Have a great weekend. And that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. mission to Nigeria will send 60 young Nigerians to participate in the 2018 Mandela Washington Fellowship, or MFW, program for 6 weeks from June 20th to August 2nd. The Mandela Washington Fellowship is the flagship program of the Young African Leaders Initiative, known as YALI. It is composed of academic coursework, leadership training, and networking. A total of 5 out of the 60 fellows will remain in the United States for an additional 6 weeks to participate in a professional development experience at select U.S. companies and organizations. Through the Mandela Washington Fellowship, 27 U.S. universities will host 700 young leaders from sub-Saharan Africa for academic and leadership institutes focused on public management, business and entrepreneurship, and civic leadership. Nigeria's fellows represent the largest cohort from any one country. As part of the orientation, the U.S. Embassy invited 3 leading Nigerian professionals to participate in a mentoring workshop. Afolabi Imukedi, Senior Special Advisor to the Vice President on Job Creation, Sarah Maka Ubabi, One Campaign Country Director, and Lawrence Afere, 2014 MWF alumnus and founder of Springboard Farms. All 3 of them shared unique perspectives on leadership and opportunity. In his remarks, the U.S. Embassy Counselor for Public Affairs, Aruna Amirthanayagam, explained that more than 11,000 Nigerians applied to participate in the 2018 Mandela Washington Fellowship Program. After the review by our partner NGO, after reading by members of the Mission Nigeria community, after an interview in either Abuja, Lagos, Ibadan, Akuri, Enugu, Port Harcourt, and Calabar, a total of 60 young Nigerians were selected, he said. Mr. Amirthanayagam explained that Nigeria has the largest single cohort from any country in Africa, and this is in recognition of the fact that the U.S.-Nigerian relationship is one of the most important, not only in Africa, but in the world. Speaking at the reception by the U.S. Embassy in their honor, Chargé d'Affaires David Young urged the fellows to be generous with the unique opportunity they had been given. The United States is making an investment in you through academic coursework, leadership training, and networking. You will return to Nigeria later this summer with increased capital. Share that wealth with others.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. The weekend's here, and I'm here too to try and make it just a little sweeter for you. Enjoy 55 minutes of pure, commercial-free, pan-African music. Killer kizomba, amazing Afro beats, Kenyan Afro pop, and more. Plus, get the latest music news. I've also got a live studio session of beautiful music for you with Congolese singer-songwriter Zsa Zsa. So sweeten up with me on Music Time in Africa this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. Uh-huh.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa.
please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.